Hi, this is Anya Leonard, the co-founder of Classical Wisdom, a site dedicated to bringing ancient wisdom to modern minds. And here I am today with Dr. Murray Phillips, the associate professor at the School of Human Movement and Nutrition Sciences at the University of Queensland here in Brisbane, Australia. Thank you for talking to me today. And we're going to be talking about the history of sport, specifically in ancient Greece and Rome. So tell me a little bit about ancient sport in Greece.
Ancient sport in Greece is really important in lots of ways. It's an incredible sporting culture in and of its own, and it's also a sporting culture that has influenced modern sporting culture. So the ancient Greeks were the founders of what they call the ancient Olympic Games. And those games were symbolic right through the ancient Greece area, so the Mediterranean basin. And we had participants all across from Italy, from a whole range of countries that we now recognise as modern countries, mm-hmm. That would come to Olympia to compete. And it was held every 4 years. So very similar to the quadrennial cycle that we have, the modern Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. And it was one of four major Pan-Hellenic festivals. So there was the Isthmian Games, the Pythian Games, and the Games of Delphi as well. So the four major games, of which the ancient Olympic Games were the major ones.
And what kind of sports did they do in the games?
Sports that we would relate to in many ways, and sports that have reverberated over time. So the ancient Olympic Games were held, as I mentioned, every 4 years, like our Olympic cycle. There was running events, so a simple race, up and down. Mm-hmm. Races that were longer, so several up and down events. And then there were races that were in military attire. They were called the hoplite races. Mm-hmm. So we had those standard events. Then we had the pentathlon, which was a mixture of long jump, what we would call long jump, discus, and also some running events. And then there were a host of other events. So there were chariot races held.
That would have been fun to watch.
Absolutely. So those events were the major events. And there were some unique defining features of those events. So the running races, for example, weren't the circular running races that we're familiar with. Mm. They were just up and down events. So the stadium itself was just a rectangle as opposed to an oval shaped. And so in many ways that dictated the kinds of events you would have. But they were quite sophisticated too. So when you look at ancient Olympia, the stadium itself has tiers for spectators, so we know that it was an important spectator event. That's really important to recognise, mm-hmm. that these games attracted a lot of attention from around the whole Greek region. Mm-hmm. And people would come from various long distances to compete in these events. And they would gain a lot of credit for their city-states through their success. And the stadiums themselves had the tiers, as I mentioned, for spectators, and they were estimated that up to 50,000 people would come to these events during their highest popularity. And the events themselves had starting devices, so there were sills within the ground where you could dig your toes into, almost like starting devices we have today, but they're permanently built in. We had an official starter who stood in a hole, mm-hmm. who held in their hand a rope that went across all the different lanes, so there'd be an automatic release for starting. Mm-hmm. So really quite sophisticated, you know, lots of the really early kind of mechanisms of modernism were there in the ancient Olympic Games. So in that sense, an understand these were really quite sophisticated games that extended almost 1,000 years, started in 776 BC, and that they developed over time. So the first games are really simple games, always tied to religious festivals. So there's a big statue and temple for Zeus that was held, that was resided permanently at Olympia.
One of the wonders of the ancient world.
That's, of course, one of the wonders of the ancient world. And the events moved over time. So we started with the running events. where then we included the pentathlon. Then there was, of course, the boxing events, which could be quite brutal, the wrestling events, which
were... Yeah, is it pancration? Is that the one where you, the only rule was don't gouge eyes out?
Yeah, so that was a pancration. So yeah, there was no gouging and no biting.
Yeah.
And you had to
But leave, everything else is, it's a go could, for it, yeah.
And leave men's genitals alone, because all the competitors were, in fact, competing in the nude.
Yeah.
So no clothes at all. And the pancration was one of the most popular events. And it's actually very similar to what we see now in MMA.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have a look at the octagon. Pretty much what was going on there was going on in ancient Greece. They had no clothes on. It was in a sand pit. But it was equally brutal.
Yeah.
And it was fighting until someone either was knocked out or raised their finger saying, I'm done.
Yeah.
With, you know, tapping out in MMA. So very similar in those kind of contexts. And then, of course, the chariot races are included as well. And they were held at a hippodrome.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that the events took time to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Grew more in popularity, attracted a wider range of participants from around the Greek world, and meant a lot. So those participants, if they were really successful, would be paid for their success and would be rewarded in terms of the city-states, in terms of honour, and in terms of property, and also domestic animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kinds of things that we... perceive as being status orientated and generating good life or rewarded to these athletes. And that's really important because one of the great myths of the modern Olympic Games
mm-hmm.
was that the ancient Olympic Games was an amateur event.
Yes, I was going to ask, so the big differences between the modern and ancient Olympics, because now it's you can't be a professional.
Okay, so the modern Olympic Games are a really interesting phenomena. So what they did was they actually recast the ancient Games. Because the period in which the modern games were revived, was the period in which they look back at the ancient Greeks and say, look, they gave us democracy, they gave us so much. Well, let's appropriate their games.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting because they appropriated the ancient Olympic Games, but they did it in a way in which really particularly modern.
Mm-hmm.
So if you compare the two events, there's actually very little that's similar, but it's there's a lot of mileage in appropriating the ancient games in terms of status and the longevity in terms of kind of profile. So if you look at the modern Olympic game at games and movement now, they actively make this link to the ancient games where the reality was they were a reflection of their time. So the mid-19th century, at the back end of the 19th century, and what sport looked like then is actually what the modern Olympic Games are much closer to than the ancient games. And one of the examples of that is amateurism. So the modern Olympic Games was founded on the principle of amateurism, so that you could not be rewarded financially for your participation in the games or in the training or in the lead-up and so on. And they argued that's what the core defining feature of the ancient games were, and that was a myth,
mm-hmm.
as I mentioned to you before. The best athletes in the ancient games were rewarded and they were paid to train. They had coaches. So they were highly specialized athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion of the amateur all-rounder that the modern games was really founded on, was founded on myth.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So moving from ancient Greece to Rome, the culture of sport changed quite dramatically. How did it change? I mean, why sure. and why, I guess, is it so different?
Well, if you think about the Greek and the Roman empires, radically different in the way they established themselves in terms of government practices, in terms of the way in which they accrued their empires. You know, the Romans were particularly aggressive, particularly warlike, warrior-like. So were the Greeks, but the Greeks did not expand in certain kinds of ways. And the way in which Rome developed its empire was reflected in the games that they enjoyed. So there was a period where they looked at the ancient Greek Olympics and went, you know, kind of like this, kind of like that. We're not really into that. And some of the early Roman leaders were supported the ancient Greek games. But, you know, in the 3rd century AD, they basically faded out. And instead, what emerged in the Roman Empire and the Republic was a whole series of games that were built around gladiatorial battles.
Mm-hmm.
And the other dimension was also the chariot racing.
Mm-hmm.
different kind of chariot racing, though, than what was in the Greek culture. So the Romans loved the gladiatorial battles. And you look now at the remains of the Roman Empire and you can see some wonderful amphitheatres and Colosseum that you would see in Rome. You know, it's an incredible structure built exclusively to watch the gladiators battle it out.
And I guess it's interesting thinking about the types of athletes, that they were professional or amateur. I guess for the gladiators, they're a whole other class. They're slaves.
That's right. So, and that's a really important distinction between the Greek and the Romans. So the Greeks, who participated in the Olympic Games and the other Panhellenic Games, were citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what went with that was a whole lot of moral and ethical issues around participation and what it meant to be a good competitor, what it meant to be successful, what it meant for your city-state.
Yeah, and you had sportsmanship and that kind of culture.
Yes. And all the slaves and the criminals had nothing to do with Greek sport. Flip it on its head, and that's what you got in Roman sport. So the Colosseum was filled with criminals, were filled with slaves, and filled with those who weren't considered good enough to be Roman citizens. Mm-hmm. So the Roman citizens loved the games, but they didn't play in them. They didn't participate in them. They watched them.
And that's probably why they were allowed to be so much bloodier and violent.
Yes, because it served a double purpose. They didn't value these people particularly. And if they were injured or maimed or killed, then that solved another problem. And it was good entertainment. I mean, these were really bloody battles, though. And a day at the Colosseum could see literally hundreds of animals slaughtered in the morning. So the Roman Empire gathered a lot of the animals from the countries they conquered, brought them to the Colosseum and to other amphitheatres, and the morning events were actually slaying the animals. And so that, and in some cases, they put criminals or other undesirables against animals with no defences at all.
Yeah.
So they're particularly brutal. And then the afternoons were usually the events for the gladiators. And the gladiators were highly specialised slaves, though, and criminals. And they would be trained in certain events. So I think there's maybe 11 to 13 different classes of gladiators with different implements.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the shows that we've seen over the years on gladiators, you know, kind of reflect the kind of skills that they had, whether they had a trident or whether they had a net or whether they had swords or and so on. So there's a range of implements they would use. And they would fight, in many cases, to the death. And successful gladiators could earn their freedom mm-hmm. over time, particularly if they were crowd favourites. And, you know, there is the stories of those who were successful or those who were defeated, and the crowd would decide, or the emperor would decide their fate with a thumbs up or thumbs down.
And you had one big scandal when one emperor went into the ring himself. I think it was Commodus.
Yeah.
He loved the game so much that he went into the arena, which was just very scandalous at the time.
That's right. And highly irregular. So there's a clear divide between the competitors and those who are watching. So the viewers were all the Roman citizens who, over time, were given incredible number of public holidays. So these were literally bread and circuses. Entertainment for a public who weren't working that much, who mm-hmm. needed to be entertained, whose leaders wanted to get some political clout and support by putting on these games, which were incredibly expensive. And the venue in which they held it in the Colosseum was incredible. I mean, we're lucky still to be able to go to Rome and see the Colosseum. But it was the forerunner to the kinds of stadiums we have in the contemporary world
mm-hmm.
because they had thought it out so well. The architecture was so good. The building was so competent that you could fill it and empty it within 10 or 15 minutes, 50,000 people.
That's amazing.
You could cover it. So it had a cover that went over when it got hot in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
The seats were really comfortable and segregated between various different groups in society. So the senators had their particular place in the stadium. The emperor had their place in the stadium. And everyone was serviced by water running down. That was perfumed. Because remember, this was a blood-soaking event. And the animals and the slaves and the gladiators were underneath, covered by a wooden surface, and would be brought up in a lift to perform. So it was really well thought out, really well designed. And at its extreme, you could actually fill it with water and they would have a naval battle for variety. So you can see in many ways that contemporary stadiums have taken a lot from that architecture and from the design and how that would work. And it's the first time in the ancient world that we really have sophisticated sporting stadiums.
Yeah, they're absolutely stunning to walk around and enjoy, even today. It's they're very impressive. Speaking, just a last question on regards to the actual athletes. Are there any sort of very notable athletes from either Greece or Rome that really stick out as very impressive for their ability or sportsmanship? Or
yes, so there are a lot of famous athletes out of the ancient world, and we'll talk about one in a moment. But it's really interesting. It's so different to the contemporary world where our athletes are really individualized and held up in society because we've got mass media, we've got social media, we've got mass advertising. So the concept of a famous athlete in ancient Rome and ancient Greece is radically different because our communication channels are so different. Mm-hmm. So there were certainly very successful athletes. There are some fantastic, and we haven't talked about this, but charioteers. Mm-hmm. So the ancient Rome had a really extensive system of chariot racing. So they had the Circus Maximus in Rome, could seat roughly 250,000 people, massive, like a horse racing stadium. Mm. This was it was one of the most popular events in the sense that it was the first time that almost a team became important in the ancient world. So all the other sports, Greek and Roman, were individual events, mm-hmm. right? So no concept of team sports existed in the ancient world. The closest thing was charioteers. Mm-hmm. And they raced in different colours, either four horses or three horses or two horses. Mm-hmm. And people would literally follow a charioteer like they would follow a team. So the chariot racing was certainly one in which individuals emerged. In the ancient games, maybe Milon of Croton was one of the most famous athletes. He was a wrestler. Mm-hmm. He competed about five or six Olympics, first as a junior and then as a senior competitor. And he was noted for his strength and power and endurance. He was probably the most famous ancient Greek athlete.
It was amazing. Okay, just to finish up, is there anything that you're working on right now that you could tell us about? Any projects that you're doing?
Yeah, so if I situated my work more broadly, I'm what they call a sport historian, which is a historian who focuses on sport. And we've got, this field's been going 60-odd years now. We've got journals and we have regular international conferences. And while I've talked to you today about the ancient Greek games and the ancient Roman games, it's not one of my major research areas. My major research areas are in Indigenous sport in Australia. So the role that sport plays for Indigenous identity historically and contemporary. And another part of my work is working with the Paralympic Games, which is, and that's probably a project I'm just starting to finish now, and it's a history of the Paralympic movement. It's one in which we incorporate Wikipedia and online history, mm-hmm. and also a written history. So they're two of my major projects that are going at the moment.
Oh, very interesting. I'll put links to those below. And thank you again for talking to me. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Anya.